When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
It's a goal. Who got the assist? Who got the assist?
Hello. So it was meant to be only myself and Stag this week. However, it's air control to Major Tom as he's fortuitously managed to join us for the record from Brisbane Airport. It was another eventful FPL game week where Anthony's wildcard and Kun Captain Pub delivered in a huge way. So we've got plenty to talk about this week. But Tom, yeah, great to have you join us both. How are your travels going?
Oh, good, Nick. Thanks. So I'm very tired, though. I think we did an overnight flight from Hong Kong just now, and it's as you mentioned, a really nice sort of a parallel that I managed to kind of land just at the time you guys were saying, oh, we're going to record in a bit. I've got 8 hours to wait in Brisbane Airport. I've got nothing better to do. So I thought, why not record a podcast? I think I'm one of the only people in the world who can say that. But yeah, all good. We're enjoying the travel so far, and very nice to be down under, directly underneath you, I think, right now. I can probably see the top of your beard.
Very nice. And so we're the most international we've ever been this week, because I'm now recording from Belgium as well, where I'm living at the moment. I've been in Ireland for the last two podcasts. So we've three different land masses represented on the podcast this week. So it's great to be back and with you all. And I'm definitely feeling a lot better about FPL than I have done in quite some time. But we'll get to those game week reviews in a second. For now, just to say, we are, of course, Who Got the Assist. Our Twitter is WGTA_FPL. Or you can find Nick at WGTA_Nick, or you can find me at FPL Stag. You can find the podcast on iTunes, SoundCloud, Spotify, or wherever you get your pods. So, Nicholas, what is going to be the focus of this week's pod?
So this game, we're going to be looking at risk profiling. This is something that's become almost an annual tradition for us to assess risk within FPL, and it's something we've been doing sort of every January, sort of looking at hits and how many hits you've taken and assessing your risk profile based on that. And we've also put a couple of polls up on Twitter, so plenty of community engagement. So thanks for all the feedback, guys. But shall we start with the game week reviews?
Yeah, absolutely. I might jump in and go first on this one, considering I wonder why. for once, it's good news coming from Belgium with Stag. So, look, guys, I'd been in a slump. It was 7 reds in 8 game weeks. I'd gone from around 500k, which was bad, to 1.3 million, which was a lot worse. Everything that I'd done that was safe had failed. I'd brought in Chelsea midfielders and tripled up or doubled up just as everything went wrong with Pulisic. I'd had Cho at one point as well. My kind of limited punts failed as well. The likes of Pookie captained versus Aston Villa, who of course had a bad defence. Where did it all go wrong that day? And then there were some ridiculous force majeure that kind of meant that I captained Pookie twice in a row. You'll remember the sewage incident I detailed a few weeks back. So it was going from ashes to ashes. So you heard it all coming on last week's pod. I decided to wildcard, and I'll deal with the hyper-management of the double game weeks later. I just can't have a Lazarus-like revival without plotting an alternative course to pretty much everybody else in the Twitter sphere and beyond that. So I'll review my game week kind of chronologically, because it didn't start all that well when I had Fabianski and Lundstrom playing in the Sheffield United West Ham game. And Fabianski proceeded to go off injured extremely early for 1 point, which was two less than McCarthy, who was my other keeper on this wild card, because they rotated quite well. Won't be rotating anymore. And I did get that Lundstrom clean sheet at least, because he had been on my bench up until 1 minute before the deadline. And thank you to whoever it was on Twitter that convinced me to put him on. Saturday, I had no Chelsea cover. I had no elements of a trap Richarlison. I had no Danny Ings. I had no Jimenez. I had no Rashford. I did have Jimenez and he did poorly. I didn't have Vardy captained. So everything kind of led to me collapsing down the rankings to about 1.8 million as night fell on Saturday. So going into Sunday, I had three players. That was Ismail Assar, who got an assist and could have done an awful lot better. He had a very good chance to score, which he fluffed, and he put through a few dangerous crosses, one of which ended in Deeney's goal, I believe, that ended up being a Doucouré assist. But he was, of course, no Duke, nevertheless, who fortuitously found his way to 14 points. And then came the City game, where I had KDB, like the whole entire world, but he had a high captaincy rate of 18%. So I knew that I needed my other punt and my captain, Kun Aguero, to do well. Yeah, he did that. Thank Christ. So I got a 20-point haul there, doubled with a hat-trick and an assist. Why did I captain him? Why did I even bring him in the first place? I thought he would play, which was the first starting point with the City player, especially the likes of Aguero, because he was nearing Thierry Henry's record and Pep had a few quotes in the media about what a great player he was, etc. Then there was also the fact that there would be no Tom Heaton. So I was like, look, even if he does play half an hour, he'll probably get one and I'll be okay. It'll save my bacon. And I also, for once, wanted to follow my own advice, which was after my extremely pro-City Stags take last week about the only person in the world that seemed to be screaming for City at the time. I kind of felt like I just had to double down on myself. Aguero was brought in as well as part of a plan to get Mo for Game Week 24. Let's see how that works out. He was to be downgraded, but maybe he'll stay. 81 points, Game Week rank of only 300k, which actually isn't as great as you might expect given such a captaincy haul. My overall rank, I'm now back in the thousands again. It's 961k, but my confidence is back. So we go again.
Yeah, definitely. You can definitely hear the confidence seeping out of you now. After quite a difficult time, as you said, you've now we've achieved that six-figure rank, and you've got to hope that improves over time. Yeah, I think I had an indifferent sort of game week, 58 points. I think a lot of people kind of have this indifference just through the captaincy of Jamie Vardy. It started off so well with that assist, and it just kind of slipped away, didn't it? After that, I'd all week been thinking, you know what, I should probably do something different here. I should really, go for a captain, which other people aren't going to go for. Everyone's going to captain Vardy. I think by kind of Friday night, or Friday afternoon your time, I kind of thought, right, I'm going to sleep now. Deadline's in a bit. Can I take my season being ended, basically, by not captaining Vardy? So he scores a hat-trick. I captain Rashford and he proceeds to do nothing. Sorry, I'm in the airport and you can probably hear that there's someone being transferred around the airport behind me.
It's authentic, Tom. It's authentic.
I kind of bottled it, effectively. I kind of went, you know what? I can't deal with, I don't want the sorrow of not having Vardy as my captain if he does really, really well. So I did that. And I think I was lucky enough to. So in Asia, you can see all the games at 3 p.m. Basically, anywhere outside the UK, you can see all the games at 3 p.m. So me and Jeremy Lewis, a friend of mine, who was sitting in a bar in Hong Kong watching the 3 p.m. 11 p.m. Asian time or Hong Kong time, and you saw the Jamie Vardy assist and thinking, right, come on, he's on for one here. He had a goal without for offside. As that happened, though, I saw that Rashford had scored a free kick. In the second half, I saw that Rashford had scored a free kick, and Vardy proceeds to do nothing against Southampton, a ramp. And I was a little bit like, I don't know, I think my overriding feeling this week is one of regret. I just think I should really, really have taken the gamble. Excuse me. And I just didn't have the sound and vision to go for it. So yeah, 58 points, down to 591k. Yeah, I've already taken a hit ahead of next week. So there you go. How about you, Nick?
Enjoying the background noise there, Tom.
No,
very entertaining. For our listeners, but yeah, pretty terrible game week for me. Only 53 points, which I think just not a great game week. Not one I want to dwell on for too long. It started badly with the injury for the goalkeeper Fabianski. My captain only got an assist, and the star man sort of Rashford sort of got 12 points. Perhaps the highlight that I should have probably trusted him with the armband. So yeah, some sort of Stags. Game rank is going ascending from the ashes. Mine's just going from ashes to ashes through it, isn't it? It's still down 50k overall. Moving on to our theme of the week, which is going to be risk, as we said. As I said, Stag took the risk this week by going for that early wild card, bringing in a few players like Aguero, giving him the armband, a few other gambles like sort of his Mela star. Really paying off for him massively, and sort of my cautious approach, I guess, just sitting with the same team, not taking too many gambles, only sort of making the one transfer, goalkeeper transfer, didn't pay off. We're going to focus on this pod on sort of risk and looking at a few different risk profiles that we have in FPL. It's something we reviewed, as we said, last year in game week 24. So this will enable us to also do a useful comparator to see what we did last year, to see what the masses did last year as well, and what's changed between last season and this season.
Yeah, it's a particularly interesting subject to me. I actually listened to this pod last season. I remember it extremely well. When I listened to it last night, I could even remember bits that Tom was complaining about at the time. It was like it came straight back to me. But doing a comparison of these two times is so interesting because you get such a good idea of what's the difference between this season in terms of general trends, in terms of like the actual managers in an empirical sense. So we can compare ourselves, we can compare some of our friends that we have the data for, because lots of people responded last year and plenty of people responded this year. But then we can kind of extrapolate from that and from like a greater data that we've got to see the difference between the seasons themselves and how they developed. Maybe we've had a slightly more concrete template this season compared to last year, where there was a massive ebb and flow in the first 20 odd game weeks of the season. So it's a particularly interesting one to look at, as well as the risk profiles of managers in general.
It's always good to have that quant data, because when we talk about FPL, I think we often say, oh, it feels like, it looks like, it sounds like. And it's always good to put numbers behind that and have metrics behind that, just so we can say, actually, this is what's going on. As you say, Stag, be able to pinpoint the way in which seasons do change, and a season profile, I guess, differs. But the risk profile is a great way of doing that, and that's why Nick and I came up with it in the first place.
Yeah, for sure. It's a metric that we've used for a couple of seasons now. But yeah, it's definitely interesting to see the different types of managers, different types of players that we've got in the game. And we kind of link it a little bit in with sort of financial services, which we both work in. When you get risk profiles to sort of determine what type of investor you are, so you might see a cautious investor, you might see an aggressive investor. And these days, actually, with the rise of sort of robo-advised technology services, many companies now actually do risk profiles on their customers and essentially give them advice based on their risk profile, and essentially answer a series of questions determining what your life sort of decisions are, and they'll assess your risk based on that. Perhaps they should ask you about the FPL team as well. So I think an example would be a cautious investor, and if you're a cautious investor, you might be recommended funds, which would be balanced funds, e.g. a tracker fund that was simply follow the FTSE 100. But if you're an aggressive investor, if you're more of a risk taker, it might recommend to you equity stocks and high risk scenarios, such as investing in startups, which could easily reward you with huge returns, or separately go bust and you could lose all your money. And yeah, as we said, this can be attributed to FPL. When we look at FPL, we've attempted to attribute a risk profile by using the binary metric of how many hits managers have taken, and as such to determine the characteristics of those managers.
So to put some actual figures behind that, we took a poll this year to ask managers how many hits they have taken this season as a proxy for risk profiling them. And those results have been quite interesting. We've had over 2,700 responses to that poll at this point, which gives us a pretty wide data set to be able to kind of analyze the whole community, which may be a slightly more extreme community than your average FPL manager, but it certainly gives us an idea of everyone who's listening to this podcast's approach to FPL and the general community as a whole too. So it will be pretty interesting to see how that develops, won't it?
Yeah, for sure. I think the first category, which was actually the most popular category amongst all the listeners, was the cautious risk taker, having taken only 0 to 4 hits over the course of the season, having only burnt 0 to 16 transfers. So 60% of our managers fell into this category. I think we've got quite a number of examples as well from the comments of the poll. For instance, FPL Death Star Sean, he's only taken 1 hit. Has an overall rank of 17k. He mentioned also he normally has about 6 to 9 hits, so slightly less this season. We'll have to talk about that a little bit later. Other examples are FPL Zlatan, 0 hits with on both teams, 12k and 27k. We've got Jake Gallagher, 546 with no hits. James Carroll doing very well as well, but 1 hit has derailed his season. Addy Nash, 2 hits and 23k. And also Tori Haugenbacher, who's overall rank 30 at the moment, has had 0 hits and even burnt a transfer. And he's mentioned that it's down to a well-balanced squad with a good bench and some luck.
Yeah, and some friends of the pod have also given comment on how they've done. So Chris, who's at Awesomeo on Twitter, he right now has taken 4 hits, so that's minus 16. So he just falls inside this bracket. But what's quite interesting is how he has developed as an FPL manager. So at this time in 2018, he had taken 12 hits, so 48 points burnt. At this point in 2019, he had taken 6 hits for 36 points burnt. And now he's taking just 4 hits. So does that give you more of an insight into how the season has developed, how Chris's management management style has developed, or both. It's quite interesting to compare the two. And then another friend of the pod is Neil Murray. This time last year, he cited a strong opening 6 to 8 game weeks when he was talking about having just taken one hit. But of course, he was ranked at about 1K in the world at the time. And so this year, I was just speaking to him earlier, and he was talking about how he was almost embarrassed by his lack of proactive action to arrest what has been a more disappointing season than that. He's currently ranked 320K, but has taken just 3 hits. And he's starting to wonder to himself, should he have taken more? And maybe it's an interesting thought to assess where someone like Neil would fall at the end of the season. He's right now a cautious risk taker, but by the sounds of it, he may be about to pivot towards a different type of risk profile altogether as the season progresses from here.
Yeah, no, it certainly is interesting. I think that the prevalent school of thought in FPL has been towards the more cautious side for a long time. Like, if you look at players like Matthew Jones, you look at players like FPL General, look at players like Joe at FFS, like, a lot of the time that has been basically advice to just hold your transfer, reassess the situation, maybe make the 2 transfers the week after. I think a lot of the time as well, that's very good concrete advice, isn't it? I mean, that's completely reasonable, and there's obviously the demonstrable kind of records to show why you do that and why you approach that, because at the end of the day, information can be a lot more important than making that 0.1 up or taking that gamble, which could potentially ruin this, like I found in previous seasons. That said, I guess I'll make this point again when we go on to where I sit. There's opportunity there, because if a lot of people are kind of sitting back and waiting to kind of take their chance, then if you take that chance a little bit earlier, you can get those points in. But as I've mentioned, the last few seasons especially have been very much weighted towards the conservative player doing very, very well.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I've also fallen into that category. I've only taken 3 hits all season, and that cautious approach has paid dividends to certain parts of the season, such as keeping faith in players like Madison, who's eventually rewarded me with his returns, but has also meant that I haven't always got the early points on certain players. For instance, I missed the early Vardy hauls. You know, I've missed the Manchester City hauls, for instance, this particular game week, because I didn't take a chance, for instance. And, you know, I've taken a few less risks, haven't tripled up on Liverpool again early enough, and, you know, they're getting clean sheet after clean sheet, so perhaps I've missed out there. But yeah, I think it is, as Tom mentioned, it is the most common of all the categories. As I said, 60% of the managers fall into this category, taking very few hits. And yeah, we see this on these sort of cautious risk takers, don't we? That these types of managers more likely to sit tight and keep faith in the players they've invested in. They're less likely to gamble. And, you know, they're perhaps, more template squads. You'll see the likes of the sort of Vardy, Kevin De Bruyne, Vardy, Kevin De Bruyne, Sadio Mane, sort of very template players in their squads, and just sitting there all season. There's no need to transfer these players out. There's no need to take any risks and any gambles, especially if the managers are doing well.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, even Jake Gallagher, who was in 546 that you mentioned there, he even pointed out that he burnt a transfer at one point. He just left a transfer disappear into the ether rather than use it, to give you an idea of a level of patience that none of us can really empathize with. Then moving on to the next risk profile, you'd be talking about people who've taken about 5 to 8 hits. Those are moderate risk takers. So that's 20 to 32 points burnt. That sort of manager, they're more likely to take a gamble. They'll show a bit of patience with players too. They might hold their wild card. So case studies this season and a bit of success. FPL Goldfellas, he's taken 6 hits en route to 64K. Mr. Faith has taken 6 hits en route to 7K overall. FPL Lewis, 7 hits, and he's over 975. And Gyanu, who has taken 8 hits to get to 2K overall. So you can definitely be in this bracket and succeed, can't you guys?
Yeah, I don't see why not. I mean, it's definitely the difference. The difference is fairly small, I suppose, because you are still showing that measure of patience that perhaps managers like myself don't have. You're still kind of holding your players, you're still holding those chips back, and you're still kind of, showing that level of faith, which is really important in your players to eventually elicit that Ziggy Stardust from them, especially in the first instance. But if you don't get those points, like, I think the times out of number where I've had a player for 2 weeks, hasn't done anything, and I've just removed him, and he's kind of turned around and then returned. For example, Grealish this season, I removed him just before that 12-pointer, which felt really, really good, didn't able to afford other things. And I think in that kind of moderate category, I thought that would be where a lot of managers would sit if we kind of widened to the general public of managers rather than those who are focused just in the Twitter sphere and are exposed to all of these sorts of different people. Just because I can imagine that there would be some a level of impatience, I guess, when people do remember to look at their teams.
So to look at a few people that we know, again, who are falling into this bracket, one is Adam P, who is at 35who on Twitter. And in 2019, at this point, he had taken two hits, and he talked about how he'd been patient all year, and then he had taken both of his hits around the festive season as self-doubt had started to creep in with the patience that he had been showing up until that point. And he talked about at the time that he felt like once he had taken one hit, it was easy to just go back again and take another hit. And maybe that has proven true this season, because now in 2020, he has taken six hits at this point whilst ranked at 330k. But what's interesting, I guess, is that Adam was in the millions all the way up to game week 10. So he used two hits in that first 10 game weeks as he's tried to get a grip on things, and he was getting frustrated trying to escape there. But then later, as he jumped up the hundreds of thousands and actually got to on the cusp of the top 100k, you start to see another layer of frustration coming in again around the festive period. He took in minus 8 in game week 20 and another minus 4 in game week 22, because he's been stuck between 110k and 400k since game week 13 now. So you're seeing a different type of frustration slipping in here, and it's Adam is then using his hits to try and escape that thousands mediocrity, I guess, which is nowhere near as bad as millions mediocrity. And I guess, speaking of, I fall into this category. So I've taken four hits, but I'm putting myself into this category because I have burnt my second wildcard, and that certainly wouldn't be normal for this category. I like to use a minus 8 to turn things around, and that's a characteristic of my FPL style. And I did take one this year, and it didn't work. And then I've taken two further individual hits, neither of which really had the effect that I had hoped for. So now I felt like I needed to steal a march on the community, and I feel that the standard double game week tactics just lead to template teams anyway. So I need to be different if I'm going to pull back from about 1 million in ranks. So I had to go and just take a few more risks.
Yeah, and 26% of managers fall into this category as per our poll. As we said, this sort of FPL manager is more likely to take a gamble than those sort of cautious managers that we referred to earlier, but would also still show patience with their players. If they blank one week, it's not the case that they're straight out, then, you know, they'll get a few more chances perhaps before they're definitely out the side. And like you said, Stu, you've pulled your wild card, so you fall into this category. But, you know, most of these moderate risk takers will still have their wild card and will still be holding it until later on in the season to try and avoid more hits when we get to the sort of the doubles and the blanks stage of the season. But typically, I guess these managers would probably have a template team, not as template perhaps as the cautious risk takers, you know, perhaps a few more differentials, but not as many as the aggressive risk takers, which is our next category that we're going to be discussing.
Woo! This is the aggressive risk taker. 9 to 14 hits per season, you burn about 36, 56 points, something like that. How do people like me approach the game? We're more likely to gamble on differentials. We're willing to take the risk on players to seek that kind of high rewards. I think players like, you know, more pay, or think players like, I don't know, like Fabianski, I suppose. That sounds a bit strange, but he was very low owned. Less patience as well. You can probably hear with me week to week that first week I'll get someone in, be really singing their praises. Second week be going, oh, I don't know, I'm not too sure about that. And the third week you'll hear that I've gotten rid of them. So there's lots of case studies on this spell that we responded to. So FPL Brain, he's taken 9 hits and he's 18k OR. Alex Brennan, he's also taken the 9 and he's up to 3k OR. But unfortunately, there are a few cautionary tales. So FPL Amar, for example, has taken 10 hits and he's way down in rank, he says. I'm 500 and something K as well, and I've taken, I think I've just gone into this category, haven't I, Nick, after the hit that I've taken for this week coming. I guess with this sort of style of doing things, it's very much, as you mentioned, impatient. I'm prone to overmanagement, and as I've tried to caution myself against this year, but you failed to do so. Admittedly, there is some kind of mitigating circumstance. I took the minus 12 a couple of weeks ago, thinking I was going to, you know, stop looking at FPL, and as it is, here I am on the podcast. So, yeah, unfortunately, I'm a bit of a rebel in that regard. I guess the reason that I do take a lot of hits is that I'm a gamer. I'm used to affecting the outcome. And hits feel like a good way to do it, because you're able to kind of turn things using a sense of skill, or at least doing something that other people probably won't do in order to make a difference to your team. that means you take a lot of risks. And over the last three seasons, especially with WGCA, that hasn't really worked. A lot of the time as well, I like to gamify FPL. So I like to look at the percentage ownership and think, okay, if I get a low-end player here, I mean, is it kind of three or four differentials these people are likely to have, people like myself? Like having those sorts of numbers of low-end differentials to me, if that all kicks off, means that I have one huge week, which means that I'm kind of a half my rank or something like that. So I'm always chasing the upside, I suppose. A really good example of something does that is Late Riser on Twitter at Late Riser FPL. He also captained Aguero this week, and he's written a few good articles on chasing the upside and going for those big differentials to kind of make the big green arrow.
Yeah, you're definitely more of an aggressive FPLer than myself, and we've seen that throughout the pod with varying degrees of success. But yeah, this type of risk profile, it's more likely to, I suppose, gamble on emerging differentials that aren't yet in the template, and we've seen this successfully applied, but also unsuccessfully applied various times of the season. For instance, your Zaha pips, perhaps an example of an unsuccessful gamble. You know, they're more likely to take the risk on early transfers as well, perhaps to gain or avoid losing value. But then obviously that has a little bit of risk in itself, especially if there's a Europa League fixture and you've brought in Charlie Austin as a hypothetical example. These types of managers are rarely in their possession of two free transfers, and basically less patience as well is probably one way of describing it as well. Two blanks for a player and they're out, especially if another highly owned player gets a haul.
Yeah, I think I'm always sizing up the opportunities and always sizing up the players to bring in. I think it's probably a product of doing WGCA that I devote a lot more brain space now to thinking about my team and where I can make an advantage, and maybe my patience could be better.
As I said, 8% of our managers fell into this category, but our final category is extreme risk takers. So these are managers that have taken 15 hits or even more. So that's up to 60 plus points burnt over the course of the season. This is 6% of the people that participated in the poll fell into this category. Some examples, for instance, were FPL Rhinos, who's taken 15 hits. He's also used both wild cards and also used his bench boosts, but he's got an overall rank of 3k, so it's certainly paying off for him to take all of those hits and take all those gambles. A few other people, like Man United guy, 16 hits, but he's happy with the turnout. Overall rank 70k, and Spiridon, who's overall rank 30k, he's taken 21 hits, and he said some were fantastic, like Aguero and Rashford, but others were disastrous, such as Son in game week 18 when he got suspended. But yeah, these managers are willing to gamble frequently. They've probably got high transfer value due to catching the early rises, but taking all these hits can be a very dangerous strategy as well, because you're constantly losing points, and often the hits don't pay off. But when they do pay off and you get in some of these early differentials, it can be very, very effective for your team.
I'm going to posit a theory about the extreme risk takers. I think we would all rather be in like Man United guy's position if we were at 70k with 16 hits. That's such an interesting and fun way to play FPL. It's a bit like, you know, everyone rides their bike wishing they could have been Evel Knievel going off on a motorbike, or, you know, you get in your car and you immediately feel like you want to be a Michael Schumacher type character. There's kind of, maybe that's an especially masculine thing, that we kind of chase that adrenaline rush far more. And I think I'm more envious of these guys who are at, let's say, 70k with 16 hits than I'd ever be of the guy at 10k with no hits taken whatsoever. Is there a sort of attraction to being in that category?
Yeah, so as I mentioned earlier on, I guess before I did WGTA, I kind of made a few different decisions than I would have made. Like, I wasn't as kind of exposed to the Twitter sphere. I wasn't as exposed to the fear factor, the FOMO of doing things, and like this whole kind of trope of patience. And like before that, I think I was probably in this category. I took loads and loads of hits. I'm pretty sure I made a transfer every week, or at least two transfers every week. And those years were the best years of my FPL life, which is quite depressing actually in some ways. But it was like each week, it was like, oh, you pretty things, whenever anything would happen. And I take a -4 or -8 to buy the Aguero or buy something like that and just play the game weeks as they were. I think kind of, I didn't know what OR was really. I didn't know all this top 1% stuff, all this kind of rank boasting. I didn't really know anything about that when we started WGTA. Like, it was all a bit of an alien concept to me. It was only kind of when I came into it that I really started to think about overall rank. Then I as opposed to my mini leagues, because all I ever used to do was just look at the mini league and think, right, okay, Mark's above me, my cousin, who does he own, who do I own that he doesn't own, which players are better, who's got a good fixture this week, okay, well, Aguero's playing Aston Villa, he's not going to own him, he's not going to be able to buy him, I'm going to get him in and captain him, therefore I'm probably going to take him over. That was where I used to play it and just take hits based on that. I don't know, I think that in some ways I feel like maybe I've lost what made me a good player, so maybe having this discussion is going to embolden me to make even more hits. But you know, this is all down to Mark Stubbins, I think, because you know, you've got the archetype of Joe, that sort of player who, as you mentioned, is very cautious, doesn't really do very much, very dullard sort of individual. My kind of hero in FPL terms is Mark Stubbins, because he would take hits and he would kind of gamble pretty big with this sort of manoeuvre, and more often than not it would pay off, because it would be something like buying Aguero before Aston Villa or something like that, like going for that kind of third or fourth choice captain that no one's ever going to own, taking a large hit to do so.
Yeah, I guess since you started doing the pod, you felt a little bit under pressure maybe, and the fear factor's got to you, but I suppose that was the good strategy, just play as in that Mark, your cousin, doesn't have, and perhaps you should go back to that old strategy. I think with this one, I do agree with you there, Anthony, about it's probably a lot more exciting to play this way, take lots of hits, take lots of chances, experiment your team and have fun. You know, no one really likes to be sitting there with the same players all season. But I found with my own personal experience, every game week, it happens sort of once every four game weeks or so, I'm like, you know what, I'm going to take a risk here, I'm going to take a gamble, I'm going to bring in a differential. Every time it blows up in my face, literally. That's sort of my past experience. It's my
literal
explosion in my face. No, but every time, like, I've done this in the past, it hasn't worked out, and it's kind of put me off, and it's turned me into a bit of a dullard, just playing with the safe picks, the cautious approach. I generally find it is the most effective strategy in FPL. And as you can see, 60% of the people who followed the poll sort of followed that approach as well. So it seems to be the most popular approach, even if, you know, playing with the aggressive approach, taking lots of hits, you know, has worked out for a few of the managers that have written in.
Oh yeah, no, I mean, there's one thing here as well that, Anthony, like, you like to do, you know, when you get 2-3 transfers, like, you know, Nick says, oh, we take a risk, you take a risk every now and again, but if it's not working for you, you I've noticed a signature stag move is to take a -8 with 2-3 transfers, isn't it? You completely kind of recalibrate your team, move some players around and see if that works. I think that's a nice little compromise between risk-taking and being patient.
Yeah, absolutely. I love doing the big -8 to make things change. You know, I save my 2 free transfers and then I burn another 2 hits right on top of that to make 4 changes. That allows you to really change the whole entire makeup of your team where your budget is invested. And usually I do those 4 transfers with an idea to pivot some other transfer after that. Unfortunately, this season it didn't work. Whereas last season, I think I did it twice and both times it kind of spurred big jumps for me over the course of maybe a 5-game week period. But it really is, it's being James Hunt and not Niki Lauda. It's being Dani Alves, not Gary Neville. It's listening to rock music, not listening to classical music. It's all that, just wanting to just everything to be loud, crazy, a little bit unpredictable, and just kind of chasing what you want as opposed to chasing what maybe your head says at times. But moving on from the risk profiles and looking to last season, how has this changed? So we had 2,000 responses to our poll last year, and it makes for some interesting comparative data. Last season, everyone found the need to take much more hits. There was only 43% of people had taken between 0 and 4, whereas this year it's 60% of people are falling between that 0 and 4 hits with a similar sample size. Then last season we had, in the 5 hits to 8 hits category, we had 32% of people. Compare that to 26% this year. So again, the trend is quite similar. 9 to 14 hits, it was 16% of people. Compare that to 8. So half as many people in that category this year as last season. And then in that 15 plus hits category, the extreme risk takers, 9% of people were in that category last year and only 6% this year. So there's definitely a bit of a trend and a big difference between the two seasons, is there not?
Yeah, no, there's definitely, I can understand exactly why that is. And I think the reason why that is Eden Hazard leaving the Premier League. That's because we've lost the premium asset. So we've lost that sort of individual in the template, that component that we want to swap around. Like last season, I mean, Nick, you had him in and out of your team so many times, didn't you, Hazard? But this year, we're kind of left with the same cast of characters as last year, minus one. We didn't really get a premium character coming in to replace Hazard. So we have the same cast of premium characters this year. We've got Salah, we've got Mane, we've got Aguero, arguably Harry Kane as well. We were all thinking he might come in and play that role, but unfortunately he did not. Aubameyang. All these characters have been here for the last couple of seasons. We've just lost one in Hazard, who was a player that we would be bringing in to mess around with these sorts of guys. So, you know, less ways to mess with a template equals less hits and less moves being made. I think that's probably a reason why, right? The loss of the Belgian magician.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you there, Tom. I think there's certain players perhaps that are in everyone's team, and there's less sort of experimentation with the premium assets. For instance, we've got KDB, we've all got Mane, and Vardy has become a premium asset. He was relatively cheap earlier on in the season. We've got Trent in defence, for instance. It's become a bit boring, Manchester City and Liverpool, in terms of our assets. You know, the expensive players at Spurs, for instance, have been pretty terrible over the course of the season, likes of Harry Kane, you know, dare I mention Eriksen, and, you know, a little bit of Ali and Son in their teams perhaps, but nothing else. The Arsenal players also haven't really delivered. Even Aubameyang's just, no one's really looked at him, even though he's quite a decent differential that's done pretty well. And Manchester United and Chelsea, who we've talked about on the pod, Chelsea and Leicester, having, you know, really cheap players, really cheap assets like Mount and Abraham or Madison that just fit quite nicely as sort of third or fourth midfielders or third strikers in our squad, without causing us to worry too much. Whilst, you know, as you said, last season we had Eden Hazard, and if Chelsea were doing well, we had to kind of tear up our teams to get Hazard in, and we'd have to lose a Liverpool or Manchester City player to afford that. And we've also got, you know, these very cheap defenders that we talked about on the pod as well before. You know, perhaps they're not doing as well as they were earlier on in the season, but, you know, the likes of Rico, the likes of Kelly, the likes of John Lundstrom, of course, absolutely smashing it over the course of the season, just meant that they fit very nicely into our squad. We haven't had to worry too much about our benches, because we always know that we've got a few guys that can come off and deliver the points, and it's allowed us a lot of flexibility in terms of owning these premium assets, and also owning these assets perhaps that should be premium assets, like Marcus Rashford, who was pretty cheap at the beginning of the season, and Tammy Abraham earlier on in the season as well.
Yeah, and like Nick, I think you make some really good points there about this season. It's the cheap players, it's the predictability of Liverpool, and maybe to a lesser extent Leicester. Whereas last season, like the events that you guys were talking about in last year's pod, they were all like huge moments. It was, how do we allocate our assets between Liverpool and City? Maybe a question that we're asking ourselves for the first time in maybe 15 game weeks at the moment. This season, there was also the big Kane exit at the time. There was Salah exit as well at one point. There were huge form swings between the teams, no less than with Manchester United, who had a huge uptick just before Christmas when Ole Gunnar Solskjaer took over and Pogba became an absolute must-buy, having been anonymous earlier in the season. Rashford likewise. And then there was also the whole big at the back trend. Remember the Ram? Remember that? Everyone but Robbo was irrelevant by game week 20. And that was such an interesting change, that everyone went from starting the season in the typical 3-4-3 or even 3-5-2 setup. Suddenly all the money went back from about game week 3 through to game week 8. And then suddenly, after we'd lost our patience with the likes of Marcus Alonso and Benjamin Mendy, all that money started to come forward again. So this was wreaking havoc. And so it's easy to see how there were so many more hits in that situation, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. And I think the last season, a bit of a contrast as well has been the settled back line to some extent this season. Because there have been, I mean, Nick mentioned Lindstrom briefly. I mean, we did have AWB, Aaron Wan-Bissaka last season, but this year we've had 4.5 million heroes like Soyuncu, who have done a great job, really. That would have been, he would have been 5.0 if the game had opened later and Maguire had already gone to Man United at that point. Like, players like that have really freed up the extra 0.5, the extra million. I mean, at one point during Christmas, it was Soyuncu, Lindstrom, Rico and Kelly, who are basically the four of your back five, plus one Liverpool guys. That's so much money you could pour forward. That, plus lack of options going forward almost, has meant that we have been very templated this year, which is why a lot of managers just thought, you know what, there's no point in me making loads of moves and remodulating things again and again and again.
Yeah, I'd certainly agree with you there, Tom. It's definitely been one of those seasons where we felt quite flush for cash, and there hasn't really been too much need to change and too much experimentation, which perhaps been slightly more boring maybe than usual, if that's sort of a bit rude to describe the season. But perhaps you know, we've seen a little bit less flexibility in terms of what's been going on with our teams. But it's probably all to change again next season. We'll see the Leicester assets rise in value, we'll see like some Marcus Rashford rise in value, and we'll see some of these Chelsea assets rise in value, and hopefully you know, it won't just be a duopoly of two brilliant teams in the Premier League, and we'll see the other top sides perhaps be a little bit more competitive again. But I think that rounds up that section anyway quite nicely. So we'll take a break here and move on to the features.
Who got the assist?
And we're back. So we're going to move on to our regular features section, starting off with market forces, where we look at the movers and shakers in the FPL transfer market to figure out what is everyone doing in the world.
As the man behind the numbers, I'm going to start by looking at the strange changes in the transfer market here. And the man being brought in the most is Danny Ings, with over 215,000 transfers in at this moment in time. He's really sort of invading that template, isn't he? And just an absolute run of form that many of us are rueing that we haven't brought this guy in. Unbelievably, he's actually now on 14 goals, which puts him joint second in the Golden Boot race. And you'd have never believed that, you know, at this moment in time, the sort of the Golden Boot race would essentially be between Ings, Vardy and Rashford. Who'd have predicted that at the start of the season?
He's joined fifth in Europe's top five leagues as well.
Danny Ings, in terms of FPL asset, I mean, why would you not? It's only 6.8 million still as well. Trading 3.9% ownership. So those halls are really going to start damaging us managers that don't own him. And Southampton's runs are pretty reasonable as well. Wolves, Crystal Palace. Tough game against Liverpool, but then Burnley at home and Aston Villa at home, especially those games in 26 and 27. I think he's probably going to be essential in the teams by that point if he continues his run.
And what's quite interesting about it, those Ings transfers are being funded pretty much from three different places, maybe four if you extend to Kane, who's already been out for a few weeks. But you've got Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang has been sold by 210,000 managers. Raul Jimenez, probably Danny Ings is this season's Raul Jimenez, and Raul Jimenez is no longer Raul Jimenez, as he's been sold by 104,000 managers as Wolves in his form has dipped. And Marcus Rashford, who in spite of scoring a brace has now been yellow flagged, and so managers are panicking and selling him too. 92,000 transfers out already.
Yeah, you do have to. It's a bit of a surprise to see Rashford so high on the transfers out after scoring 12 points. You do have to wonder if there's life on Mars with some of these managers that are selling him and getting rid. But the second most transferred in player is Aguero after that hat trick. No surprise that he's appearing back on the market forces with a few managers looking at 115,000 managers transferring him in. They're looking at the hat trick and saying, let's dance. And the Premier League history maker fits in nicely. Two of those squads that are selling Aubameyang, because they're sort of around the same price point in the Manchester, selling Kane as well. Straight swap for Aguero. That looks perfect for the team. And he's alongside Riyad Mahrez there, who's the third most transferred in player after his haul as well. He's had 100,000 transfers in at this moment in time.
Yeah, and no surprises here in the Diamond Dogs. You've got Richarlison, Stag's famous trap man. 89,000 managers have bought him in, and Vardy, 86,000 managers, have maybe regretted their decision to sell, have bought him back.
Yeah, it's an interesting one. Richarlison got another return there. That's just two returns in a row for Stag's hated man. And West Ham, Newcastle, Watford, Crystal Palace up next for Everton, and perhaps another little bit of a cheeky differential that people are eyeing up. And Vardy, interestingly, he's transferred in and transferred out as well. So, a lot of a mixed bag there. And we've got a few questions on Jamie Vardy later on. But, he's still delivering the points with an assist there. And obviously, he missed the last couple of games as well. So, a few managers, perhaps some of those more aggressive or extreme risk takers, got rid of Vardy after a couple of blanks and now transferring him back in. But I think that wraps up the market forces. Our next section is going to be the Stag take for the week. So, Stag, what's your take for this game week?
So, This week, I think we're starting to see a little bit of doubt creeping in about Leicester City. We just saw that there in the market forces where Jamie Vardy is both being bought in droves and maybe sold in droves as well. And that's quite interesting. And even the questions on Twitter have been dominated by doubts about Leicester. And it's quite interesting. Just to take one example, Chico Fuzz has asked us, is it time to reduce the Leicester players in our squads? And my answer is kind of yes. And it's not sell, it's more just consider benching from now on. And that is focusing largely on Kagawa Soyuncu, who is probably the representative in Leicester's defence that everybody has. As mentioned when we were talking about this season as a season profile, he has been the cheap entry route into that, what has been a brilliant Leicester defence up until now. But we're starting to see them creak. You can see the lack of dynamism in their team. Their pressing has slowed down. And that is really showing in the statistics as well. So what I did was I've compared game weeks 13 to 17, where they played a pretty standard array of teams, and game weeks 20 to 22. Why didn't I include 18 and 19? Because they played Liverpool and Man City. Those are always going to be data skews at the best of times. So 20 to 22, while they've played West Ham away, Newcastle away, and Southampton at home. Not fixtures that you would have thought would be overly difficult in the overall scheme of things for this Leicester team, who have been so reliable all season. But we're starting to see that their defence is definitely coming under an awful lot more pressure. So in those recent three game weeks, they've had about 11 shots conceded per game, 8 shots in the box conceded per game. Take that earlier span in the season that I mentioned, and it was about 9 shots per game they were conceding, only 5 shots in the box per game. That's a big difference. And then just to take another stat, I've looked at defensive slips and specifically tackles lost. So between game weeks 13 and 17, they were only losing about 4 tackles per game. That has jumped to 9-ish now. That is a huge difference. And I think it just tells you how much pressure that team is coming under. Even Brendan Rodgers has been talking about how, having played about 2 games per week, each week in December and after that, that was 12 games in total. And they've had to take multiple days off this week, according to The Athletic, just to try and get them back in shape. Rodgers has been talking about Youri Tielemans, who has been too jaded and who couldn't play against Southampton. They had huge ball giveaway stats as well against Southampton. Kasper Schmeichel has already been called into making 5 saves 3 times this season, against Liverpool away, Man City away, and Southampton at home just last weekend. We're seeing Leicester under pressure. And I think it's time for us to understand that Kyle Garcia-Yuncu is definitely benchable again. And we have to start managing him that way. There's a point where Leicester were so consistent and he was so highly owned that it was very hard to justify not playing him even when the fixture was tough. I think that period has ended. And I think we can now look at benching him. I'm already wondering about the West Ham home fixture and maybe the Chelsea home fixture and the Wolves away fixture and the City home fixture. Those are some of their next few fixtures, all of which I could see Soyuncu being benched for. There's a difficult run coming up. He's not essentially playing anymore, put it that way.
And beyond, I know you mean Soyuncu. I mean, we bought him at 4.5, and I guess he's benchable. We don't want to be the man who sold the world, do you? You don't want to be the man who's selling him and him to come back into form. Like the Athletic asked Bucyson, and the sheer number of games that they've played in such a small squad, especially defensively, have definitely taken their toll. Like at the back, you've got the Jevons Soyuncu double up, and then behind them, who do they have? They've got an aging Wes Morgan who turns slower than milk does. And you've got Benkovic, who's untested at this level, although he's a fantastic football manager by. Ben Chilwell was also cited as being absolutely knackered as well, playing kind of a wing-back and also a full-back for that Leicester team, like being attacking out on the left and having to trudge all the way back to DL. I think that maybe this kind of this week off to be really, really beneficial for them, because we often see around the Christmas time period, the intensity of games, as you say, does get to these sorts of players. Just a little time to refresh and reset. Could well see Leicester improve again. I agree with Soyuncu being benchable. Linked to kind of this chat around Leicester not perhaps being as good as they have been, I've seen a few kind of people saying, oh, you know, I'm not too sure about Vardy. Is Vardy sellable now? I just kind of watch and wait on that for the time being. They do have a leaky Burnley next. They do have West Ham. Obviously, they've improved a little bit under Moyes. But, I mean, Leicester's run is still pretty good towards the end of the season. It's a kind of game 37 and 38. They play two top six teams in a row. But the majority of the fixtures up until that point are actually pretty good. And don't forget, there could be a double game week in game 28 for Leicester as well, consisting of Norwich away at least. So that is, you know, all the more reason to keep these players. I wouldn't sell them yet. Maybe if you have Maddison and you need to kind of be making the funds or making the space for a Mane or a Salah for your double game week, Liverpool, then do look at it. But I'm not too sure at the moment whether we should be selling them. But yeah, Soyuncu at 4.5 was always one of those players who you would play, you'd throw on if he was doing all right, and Leicester were doing all right. But at that price point, I've got no worries about benching them.
Yeah, I think you have to be concerned in terms of Leicester and the amount of minutes those players have played, especially the back four, is a little bit worrying. And of course, there's also been the Wilfred Ndidi injury recently as well, which has affected the performances. I mean, we saw it in the League Cup semi-final against Aston Villa, for instance, with his replacement, Dennis Pratt, not really delivering and being able to control the midfield. And I think Hamza Choudhury came on at half-time in that game and put in a pretty decent performance, to be fair, for that second half. Subsequently started the game against Southampton, but wasn't able to control it in that sort of commanding way that we see Ndidi play. And they have been pretty reliant on him in terms of their defensive performances, him being sort of the key man in that central midfield. And yeah, it is a little bit of a concern to see this downturn in form, especially for myself, because I am tripled up in Leicester at this moment in time. And I am starting to waver a little bit in terms of whether I should be tripled up, especially when I'm looking at some of these Manchester City assets. I'm looking at ways to triple up on Liverpool, be that either with Mo Salah or a defensive double up, because I'm possibly back on that one again. So I'm considering, selling Madison, who, despite being a little bit unlucky with the VAR decisions that have happened in recent weeks, he's only actually got one return in six, which isn't very good, to be honest. So yeah, he is potentially on the chopping board. I think Jamie Vardy certainly stays in my team, and Soyuncu, I think, despite our defensive woes or defensive concerns, I think having bought him at around 4.6 million or so, you know, I am loath to sell him, because I still don't think there are particularly fantastic options available in the sort of trade swap scenario. And looking at Leicester's next fixtures, we mentioned they were relatively challenging, but I think Burnley away is a pretty damn decent fixture, all things considered, because Burnley have been pretty shocking in recent weeks and have struggled for a number of weeks now. West Ham at home, that's another team that sort of seemingly in a relegation battle right now. So, you know, I'm not loath to get rid of my Leicester assets super quickly, but it is a little bit of a concern. So yeah, fantastic take there, Stag.
Yeah, like, it's a slightly more nuanced take than usual. You know, usually it'll be buy or sell, whereas this is very much in between. It's more like sell, perhaps on the midfielders, where nobody has really generated a huge amount of value and they're definitely sellable assets. Vardy, I just feel like it's just not time to sell him yet. But with Soyuncu, we can definitely think about benching him. I think, like you, Nick, I have a lot of value tied up in Soyuncu, and I won't be selling him anytime soon. But it is definitely something to consider, is just benching him. It was definitely remiss of me not to mention the Ndidi injury as well. He's not actually expected to play either of those two Plum fixtures coming up, and looks like he'll be back for the tough run. And it is worth looking into how much of an effect his absence has had on Leicester's defensive slump in general.
Cool. And the final thing this week in the features is Dad Watch. Obviously, it's a section where we keep up with how Nick's dad's doing. A very strong start to the season, but it seems to have depreciated a little bit. Has he arrested the slump, Nick?
So yeah, he did get a red arrow this week, but I think it's only really a very small red, 57 points. He was particularly peeved off with VAR this week. VAR's impacted Dad Watch, because he had a Johnny Evans goal, which would have been a Madison assist, chalked off this game week. So that was a painful blow to him. But yeah, he got 57 points. He's ahead of me again, but it's become very tight between myself and my dad now, actually, in terms of our points, because he's 2 points ahead. So getting quite competitive in terms of who's first and who's second in our mini league right now. So yeah, a little bit of excitement there. So cool, that's the end of our feature section. After the break, we'll be moving on to the community questions section.
Who got the assist?
So we're back, and it's time to catch up with the Who Got the Assist mini league. If you want to join the league, the league code is EIKX03. And we've got a new leader to the mini league. It's Manuel Javeri, who also wrote in for our risk section, saying he's only taken 3 hits so far this season. He got a game week score of 81. which is absolutely fantastic. Total score of 1,418 now, which is sort of right up there now. Overall rank 49. Fantastic work there, mate. Captain De Bruyne, 18 points, but also had Mahrez with a 17-pointer in his front line of Rashford, Vardy, Ings, very much breaking into sort of the template in terms of being that new template front line. So, yeah, and he's also got the double Sheffield United defence as well with Henderson and Lundstrom, which has really, really paid off for those that took that risk on a double Sheffield United defence. So, well done. Well done, Manil. Second, dropping into second is Muts Abdul Islam with Spartacus on 1,405 points. In third is Declan Rinn with the Wesley Crushers on 1,401. Joint third, actually, with Gaetan De Becker with the Reds Army. In fifth is Johnny Briggs with the Den Donkeys. In sixth is Kieran Screeton with Pain in the Vase. Seventh is Neil Thompson with Venky's Out. Eighth is Brian Evans with Chupacabra. Ninth is Luke Burgess with Lukewarm FC. And 10th is Mark Bird with the Tweety Dreamers. So well done, all the guys in the top 10, all doing fantastically well, all in the top 1K in the world as well.
Yeah, some absolutely fantastic results there in the mini-league, it has to be said, and fair play to MJ right up there at the top. And with the mini-league rounded off, let's move on to the questions from the community. The first of which has come in from FPL Trojan, and he's touching on a theme that we hammered home heavily last week, but it's definitely worth talking about again this week, given that 24 and the double game week is just around the corner. FPL Trojan was asking about, is the triple Liverpool defence a viable option? And Nikhil Narayanan has also asked us about the double Liverpool attack or the double Liverpool defence and which of the two we should be looking at. Does anyone have any thoughts on that? Any update on your feelings, Nick, a week later from the last
part? I'm just chopping and changing constantly at the moment. It's really hard for me to make this decision. I feel like I'm just going to be leaving it right until the last minute now, because I was thinking about Mo Salah, but I'm still looking at the way I can actually fund getting this guy in. It's getting really complicated because I felt like I had a way out. I was going to sell Rashford, I was going to sell Dele Alli, and I'd get the cash that way. But after Rashford's brace, I'm like, can I actually get rid of Marcus Rashford? I mean, looking at Manchester United's fixture in 24, they play Burnley at home, and I just said that that's a fantastic home banker. You could potentially even see, you know, United getting a proper haul in that game, getting maybe 4-0, another Rashford brace. I mean, I don't really want to miss out on those Marcus Rashford points. He's having an absolute stormer of the season. As I said, he's competing for the Golden Boot alongside Ings and Vardy, and he's on 134 points now in FPL, which is making a challenge for me to sell him. So I'm having to think about actually who do I bring in as my third Liverpool player. And to be honest, to get a defender in is much more affordable for me. And that defence is just, you know, they're just rock solid now, aren't they? I mean, we talked about the lack of clean sheets over the course of the start of the season, but now it's four in a row, it's five and six. And when you've got the likes of Andy Robertson that we know can get attacking returns as well, he's picked up six assists over the course of the season. He's also got a goal, and last season he got 12 assists. It was pretty damn brilliant in terms of offering attacking returns. You actually think, maybe I should just get Robertson in. He's not that far behind Salah in terms of overall points, just 22 points behind Salah, and he's almost half the price. So maybe that's one way that I could triple up on Liverpool. Look at the value argument and think, okay, I do really want Mo Salah in my team to complement Sadio Mane in that midfield. I will be nervous as hell not owning him, looking at all those managers that potentially triple captaining him, but you know, I've got a stronger team because I don't have him. I'm able to afford you know, a stronger midfield, and if you know, the other option, if I don't sell Rashford, would be to potentially sell Ali and Madison and end up with a 4.4 million midfielder and Salah, and then I'd have to pay someone like Mason Greenwood or, you know, Diego Rico, and I really don't want to be doing that in that particular game week. So that's my concern. That's looking at my own personal team. As I said on the last pod as well, it was worth listening to because we had quite an in-depth discussion on Liverpool on that pod. that it is very much dependent on your own personal team, your own personal circumstances. We're not going to be advising, oh, you should definitely double up in midfield. You should definitely triple up in defence, definitely double up in defence. That's not what we're trying to do here. We're just weighing it up and looking at our own personal situations and trying to, you know, give a balanced argument, because, it, you know, both defence, doubling up on defence or doubling up in midfield are both very, very viable strategies for this game week.
Yeah, to kind of contradict you somewhat, like, I would say to answer Trojan's question, is that the triple Liverpool defence is probably a bridge too far for me. But that said, the double up for Liverpool is now so much more tempting, given I brought in Mr. Starman Aguero for the last game week, and he's almost done too well for me. The idea had been to have him as a two-week punt and then to sell him to free up the funds to get Salah, whereas all of a sudden it looks an awful lot easier to find a way to get Robbo into my defence as well to join TAA. So it's really the nerves of Salah versus the feeling foolish of selling a player who's just scored a hat-trick. I sold Mo Salah a few seasons ago when he scored that hat-trick against Bournemouth. I sold him straight after that, which was the totally contrary move. Loads of people had sold him just before it, but for whatever reason, I sold him after that hat-trick, directly after, and he went on to score, I don't know, he had 8 goals or something in his next 5 games. It was a ridiculous haul, and I missed most of it. And I don't want that to happen again, and that's definitely ringing in my ears as I speak right now.
Yeah, that certainly makes sense. It's actually, it's music to my ears, Nick, as a Salah owner that you're not going to own him. Maybe I'll have a chance to catch up with you if I throw the triple captain at him this year. Look, like with the double Liverpool defence, completely makes sense. Over the last 6 game weeks, an absolutely, frankly, ridiculous XGC of 3.63, zero conceded. That's a sizable distance away from the second best defence, which is Southampton, actually, at 4.49 XGC, Man United in third. As Nick said, it's all about your personal circumstance, really. I'm not too surprised that a lot of people look at it and thinking, you know what, it's probably easier to get a double defence in here, and I might as well. That's kind of what I was gambling on in the first place, going with the Mala double up. And really, with my team now, what my plan is to, after game week 24, perhaps wildcard in game week 25, and I've got a question on this in a second, and reformat, I guess, to that double Liverpool defence after that. At the moment, I'm locked in. But I think going forwards, that double Liverpool defence is looking very, very good. I'm sure they'll continue to churn out the results and the relentless charge for the title. It's just the case that I'm going to hope that Salah is going to be difficult for people to get in. I think Mane's the one who's going to be pretty uniform, universal. So I'm hoping that Salah will be the big cheesy differential, which will really help me next week.
Moving on, I think we covered Leicester as well, quite in depth as part of your stag take as well. We had quite a few questions on Leicester as well. Techno Jutsu and Boring Bones, for instance, asked us about Maddison, whether he's worth holding on to. As I said earlier on in the pod, you know, one return in six does start to raise concerns, even though his underlying stats have remained pretty fantastic. FPL Sizz as well asked us sort of a binary question of whether it's Vardy or Rashford. To be honest, at the moment, I would say you should still try and hold both. And FPL Dispatch also asked us about the Burnley going to be hosting the Vardy baby celebration, which I think we might talk about a little bit more when we cover transfers and captains.
Yeah, absolutely. So maybe looking at questions away from those teams that we've followed so far, and looking at a question that's come in from Lee of FPL Family fame. And he's asked me, I guess, with the Aguero success, is Stag now going on a 16-week differentialathon culminating in a Game Week 18 final award at the top 10K? Probably not, Lee. It probably won't happen. It'll never work that way if I continue to chase differentials. But I'm definitely, I guess, feeding back into the risk profiles we were speaking about earlier. I'm going to be sitting in a more extreme category, I think, than I would otherwise have been as I chase a higher rank. I think the top 10K is a dream scenario, whereas the top 100K is perhaps achievable. I'm about 100 points off it, I think, at the moment. And I think that's really where my aims lie.
Yeah, well, that's a worthy aim, to be honest. I think it's probably the same sort of aim that I've got. I think I'm only about 18, 19 points in front of you, which is probably, you know, 400, 500k as it stands. And I think it will be time to take risks now. I think as I said right at the top about my game week, I'm really, really genuinely annoyed about the fact that I bottled it and I didn't take the risk that I should have. I think taking risks with the captaincies like you did this week, taking risks with player signings, going for the Riker, or at least going for like the clever differential, as we'll call it, if it turns out well, is probably going to have to be the route that people like you and I in particular are going to have to take now. But Nick, I guess in your situation, you're going to want to leave it.
Well, yeah, you say that, but like my rank does feel like it's a little bit in free fall over the course of the last 4 to 5 game weeks. I think I'm on a run of sort of 5 red arrows in 6, which it really isn't that great. So maybe it is time again to start taking a few more risks. But yeah, I mean, I think certainly when it comes to differentials, they can massively pay off, as we saw with this Aguero captain decision. You know, the likes of managers supporting Riyad Mahrez as well. You know, Manchester City absolutely smashed Aston Villa, and I thought, why the hell do I not even just captain Kevin De Bruyne? I've become very, very boring and just sort of auto captain Vardy, not taking too many transfer risks. Some reason Dele Alli is still in my team. God knows why. I haven't got rid of this guy yet, or what I'm doing with him still in the team. So I think sometimes you know, a differential form can be a little bit fun as well, as we talked about earlier on in the risk section.
Yeah, absolutely. Part of me just wants to be that Evel Knievel or that James Hunt that I was talking about earlier. And I maybe, I guess, feeding into what I did, which was wild card, Charlie F1 was asking about when is the best time to use the second wild card. So there's the suits your team approach, and then there's the, I guess, what FPL Twitter or the FPL community will suggest you do. And those are two divergent paths. And I guess I'll let one of the guys talk about what FPL Twitter is going to do, because they'll be closer to that path. Whereas on my side of things, it was just a matter of use that second wildcard when you need to, because if you're not happy with your rank and you think you need to arrest the situation and maybe the change you want to be, then pull the trigger pretty soon. I would say at this point, you can probably set yourself up for the double game week with Liverpool, and then after that, I think really go for it.
So I think we've got Ben Crellin coming on for the 100th pod, actually, game week 28. But I think the kind of prescribed approach at the moment is to wild card in game week 36, in preparation for a game week 37 bench boost for that massive double game week that we're anticipating. That kind of makes sense if you're doing well. I mean, if you're in top 100k, you're consolidating your position, your team's in a good position. Absolutely makes sense. But I'm very much on Anthony's side here. I mean, I probably would have probably I'm looking to wild card in game 25, as I mentioned. But if I was in Anthony's situation, really needing to push on from the millions, stuck there, treading water, doing the wild card early makes sense. And of course, we're all going to say it depends on your team, on your profile, on your stature. It really is that. It really is your judgment, and it really is a point at which you kind of think, yeah, my team needs it. And do you need a wild card to move around the likes of Rico, Kelly, etc.? Probably not. Do you need a wild card to sell a Salah and then reformat your team entirely around the bigger defence and maybe getting someone like Mahrez in as your punt in midfield? Yeah, probably. That's probably worth doing, but that's only your own judgment that can inform that. Nick, what do you think?
Yeah, so as you said, we've got Ben Crellin coming on for 100th pod, and generally around that time, we've got more of a knowledge of when the blanks and the doubles are, or what specific players, what specific teams are in fact blanking, and what teams have got double game weeks. And sometimes, as you said, if the decision is at the moment to go with the wildcard game 36, that seems very, very late in the season, and by that point, you know. Often it's essentially all but over, apart from unless you have an absolutely fantastic double game week. But there, you know, there could be a case, for instance, to wild card in 27 if there's a double game week, for instance, that emerges for Leicester in that 28. So at the moment, we don't really know when what teams are blanking fully, what teams have the double game week. So it all can be very much dependent on what happens in that field, if that makes sense. It's not a sort of a specific game week. I'd say you have to wild card, do it then. It does depend on your team and what's happening in your team. I think if you're struggling, then by all means, the early wild card can pay off quite well for you. But if, as we saw with Stag, but if you know, if you're thinking, actually, I want to avoid hits as much as possible, I want to avoid hits, I want to, you know, make sure that I have a starting 11 in all the blanks and, you know, doubled up in all the double game weeks, then sometimes holding on to that wild card for as long as possible can be effective. I think unless things really go awry, I'll probably be trying to hold off as late as possible to find that optimum moment. But at the moment, for me, it's a wait and see. But I certainly understand why some managers will be thinking, actually, you know what, I'm going to use the wild card now, and we saw it. And this is a perfect example from this game week where we've seen it used to great effect.
And so I guess there's two old adages that are kind of coming to mind here. One of them is you can't fatten the pig the night before the fair. And maybe that's what I feel the second wild card in around game week 36 is doing. It's like you're trying to do everything a little bit too late, especially if you're playing catch up. Whereas for those who are trying to consolidate, it makes sense. But then maybe equally, and this leads into our next question, there's no point going to the fair after the market has ended. And one wonders when FPL Nicotelli is asking about whether we can trust Mahrez as a premium midfielder. Can we, or has that market already ended and is that pig already sold?
So can we trust Mahrez to bring home the bacon? I think with Mahrez, I mean, after that massive 17 points there, I can understand people looking at him. I'm looking at him. And we really need to see how City approach the Champions League this year and approach the league as a balance to that. Which players get favoured, how Pep sets up compared in the two competitions. It's very, very hard to tell at the moment. With Mahrez, I think what that he does offer is when he's on the pitch, fantastic PPG. What he also offers, of course, is ridiculous unrestrained rotation. We've just got no idea what the hell Pep's going to do every week. We've said that a million times in the pod. You know that. We know that. So if you do buy a player like Mahrez, you'll have a lot of people who use the old tide. Oh, it's a trap. Really, what it is a calculated gamble that you do get these kind of big performances. I remember Dom from the Three Amigos had Mahrez earlier on in the season, got a few no-shows and then suddenly got a 13-pointer. It does happen. So what you'd be doing is basically hedging your bets and saying, okay, Mahrez, people are going to be put off him because of the fact he's a rotation risk. So I'm going to get him in as a really explosive differential. And you've got players like Todd Cantwell who can come off the bench for you and do a job. Soyuncu, if he becomes bench fodder, could also do a job for you off the bench. Like, you're basically just saying, okay, I'm playing with 12 men if you've got Mahrez, or playing with, you know, that will kind of have to be your mentality if you go for a player like that. But I do think it's a great option because City are posting amazing stats at the moment. KDB is hygiene. If you can get a Kun Aguero in, great. If you can't and you can afford Riyad Mahrez at 8.7, 8.8, I think it is.
8.4.
That's a fantastic differential. So if you can afford Mahrez 8.4, why not? That's a fantastic differential is the way I look at it. I wouldn't look at it as, obviously it's a risk and you know the risk of bringing him in. But if you're looking to catch up, why not? If you're looking to consolidate, probably not.
Yeah, I certainly think he is definitely a decent option in FPL. I mean, he'd be the perfect move for me right now, actually, to be honest, in terms of dealing with my Dele Alli issue. I could just do a straight swap, get rid of Alli and bring in Riyad Mahrez. And I should have done that a long time ago, perhaps. But yeah, as you said, he's got great PPG. He's been brilliant. You know, he's had quite a few hauls. It's not the first haul, to be honest. This is his fifth time this season scoring double figures. So, you know, this isn't a freak occurrence for Riyad Mahrez. Of course, it was a few seasons ago in Leicester's title-winning season where he was the top scorer in FPL with 17 goals and 11 assists. And so far this season, he's got 7 goals and 9 assists and certainly looks dangerous when he's playing. And at the moment, it seems to like perhaps he's displaced Raheem Sterling from the Scots side, and Sterling's been, you know, relatively quiet recently, and he's only played 1 minute in the last couple of games. So Mahrez seems to have that slot, but like we said, it's Pep. You know, it could change week in, week out. So the risk is there with a player like Riyad Mahrez that he might not be playing week in, week out. He might only turn up for a 15-minute cameo and then block your bench points. And we do know that about Manchester City. So that is the risk. I mean, looking at their fixtures, Crystal Palace at home, Sheffield United away, Spurs away, West Ham home, and Leicester away, it is a bit of a mixed bag in terms of fixtures. But yeah, Mahrez definitely performing well over the course of the season. He's now sixth highest ranked midfielder, despite only having played 54% of the minutes available. So that's pretty damn incredible, all things considered. So yeah, why not go for it if you fancy a bit of a gamble there?
Yet, in fairness with Mahrez as well, he has now started 4 of the last 5. And so one does wonder if he is solidly into that team, or does the question of the trap raise its head again? But he's no Richarlison. I guess leading into the next question, we've Khaleesi's Dragons, who's asking about Watford, whether they're in a purple patch or if their whole entire team is a trap. And we did cover this last week, so it's just to mention it briefly. I did bring in Ismail Assar, and I was pretty happy with that. They looked very dangerous over the weekend against an absolutely torrid Bournemouth team, which I don't think is representative of anything. However, I'll be keeping him for another few weeks. It wasn't a one-week punt for me. Guys, do you have any thoughts on Watford?
Yeah, as we said when we talked about Nigel Pearson and the new manager bounce, he's really inspired the team, hasn't he? He's got them all in a room saying, we could be heroes, we're not going to get relegated, we're going to deliver the points this season. And, you know, they look like they could easily save themselves now from relegation, when they essentially looked doomed when Pearson took over. So I certainly think, you know, they definitely look a lot better. I talked about the goalkeeper, Foster, last pod, and I'm perhaps considering him as a Fabianski replacement. No, I'm more leaning towards Matt Ryan at this moment in time, but I think Foster strongly needs to be considered as a goalkeeper option. We talked about the disappointment of the defenders recently, the 4.0 defenders start, you know, Rico, a lot of people were talking about selling Rico, for instance. He didn't even play in the Watford game because he was so poor for Bournemouth. And Cathcart at 4.3 million really fits the bill as, you know, a really decent neighbour, maybe even Cabaselli, though I'm sure perhaps you still have nightmares over that -4, don't you, Stag? So maybe not. Both of those guys perhaps in the defensive option, good picks. And he's made a start, only 6.2 million, really starting to shine in the Premier League under the tutelage of Pearson as well, and his mate Sadio Mane. So a few picks out there. I think obviously I forgot to mention the Duke as well, Ducouré, who scored at the weekend, starting to show some attacking prowess now. That's two goals and two assists in three game weeks for him. So maybe at 5.6 million we should be considering him too.
Yeah, and absolutely. The Duke is living in the opponent's box at the moment as well. He just seems to continue to pop up. Those kind of runs he was making from deep before have become far less deep and far more frequent recently, which is very interesting to see.
29 points in three games, Ducouré now. Yeah, he's been moved to that kind of rampaging number 10 Yaya Touré-esque role, hasn't he? And he's doing it very, very well indeed. 5.6 million, you really could be looking at that and thinking, oh, that could be decent. He's actually 0.1% more owned than Sarr right now, although that's not really saying very much because the highest owned Watford player is still Foster at 3.6%. Overall, they're just a team that if you are looking for low-end differentials to catapult up the ranks, they are the ones worth going for. If of the three of the next four fixtures are pretty decent. They've got Spurs at home next, Aston Villa in 24, Everton at home in 25, and then Brighton in 26. So three of the next four are decent, and arguably Spurs decent as well at the moment.
Yeah, so I think when it comes to Watford, I think we're starting to look at them and say maybe they're not actually a trap and maybe we should start to consider some of their assets in our FPL teams. But moving on now to transfers and captains. So for me, it's still a little bit up in the air in terms of what I'm going to do. I've got to bring in a goalkeeper, a little bit boring again, but it's got to be done. Unfortunately, it looks like Fabianski is potentially going to be out for a little while now. So I think he's got to go, and which is a shame because I got him in for the double. But I think the man I'm going to bring in at the moment is Matt Ryan. I just think in terms of the goalkeepers available, Brighton have a really nice run of fixtures actually coming up. So they've got Aston Villa at home, Bournemouth away, West Ham away, Watford at home, Sheffield United away. I can certainly see some clean sheets there for Matty Ryan. And it also actually fits the bill in terms of just a set and forget, because I've got David Button as my 4.0 million reserve goalkeeper. So if anything happens to Matt Ryan, and hopefully it doesn't, at least I've got the backup and don't need to continue to faff around with goalkeepers because it's making me sick. So I think for me, it's going to be Ryan coming in. I've actually got two free transfers still. So whilst my Salah plan seems to be out the window, I'm potentially going to use that transfer still. I think I do want to get rid of Dele Alli, even though they do have Watford next. And, you know, that potentially could be a decent game for Spurs. I still want to get rid of him. So I don't really know what I'm going to do at the moment. I've really got to think about it a little bit more before I actually decide what to do, because I'm very much up in the air, but at least going to make the goalkeeper decision. And in terms of captains, I think it's probably going to be Vardy against Burnley away. There's obviously a few other options out there. You know, De Bruyne, I think, certainly an option against Crystal Palace at home. He's just been brilliant this season, and I've regretted not captaining him. It's ridiculously. He's got 16 assists and 7 goals so far. 16 assists in 22 games is just an absolutely ridiculous record for KDB. So he's an option. But I think at the moment it's on Jamie, though he is certainly running out of chances as the captain pick.
Yeah, no, it certainly makes sense. I was looking at Vardy myself, but yeah, I indulged in the Space Oddity, which was having 0.0 and having to make my transfers early. So I've done my transfers early again, took another hit, which put me into the aggressive risk-taker category. I removed Fabianski for Matt Ryan as well. I would have ideally wanted Dean Henderson, but I only had a 4.8 to spend. So I thought, yeah, I don't want to mug around with the transfers there, with the goalkeepers. Just get Ryan in and just leave it. I'm in Australia as well, so why the hell not, mate? I also... brought in Ingsy for Morpay. I think Morpay is one who's beloved of the stats hounds, but doesn't really do very much. And watching Ings versus Leicester, that man's an absolute fire at the moment. The form of his life, like, it's just so frightening not to own. He could have scored 3 or 4 there. He hit the crossbar twice in about 2 minutes at one stage. Absolutely incredible. So he had to come in for me as well. To finance that, I had to sell Traore, who is the classic FPL buy. Was absolutely killing it before I brought him in. Seems to do absolutely nothing the moment I brought him in. But I did make 0.1 million profit. So I sold him. Cousin Todd is now back in the team. He's been fielded at home to Bournemouth. And the captaincy at the moment is on Danny Ings. I think I'm going to have to make a little bit of a punt this week. I'm guessing most people are going to be looking at De Bruyne or Vardy. So I'm going to look at the third or fourth pick captain. It's on Ings at the moment. But I am strongly considering Salah or Mane actually as well against United. I still think United that kind of win against Norwich was very one-sided, but Norwich are a patchwork team who are destined for the drop. I think Liverpool are going to have too much for United, so I could very well be looking at a Salah captaincy, but at the moment it is on Ings just because that he is just absolutely on fire, as I mentioned. So, yeah, that's what I'm going to do. Had a man's for already. If I do get a couple of big injuries this week, I will wildcard early. But I plan to wildcard in game week 25.
Looking at my team, I've already got my first fire to put out post-wildcard, which is obviously the Fabianski problem. And I think I might just leave him there for now and work it out over the next few weeks. So Alex McCarthy was the player I was going to play this game week anyway, not Fabianski. So I'm pretty okay with it for now. But looking forward in my team then, I know I'm definitely prone to being hit by some of those behavioural factors we were talking about a few earlier, but maybe overconfidence, the illusion of control, or maybe excessive optimism. I might be hit by anything and I might captain somebody like Todd Cantwell if I wasn't careful. And remember, it was actually Norwich and Bournemouth's first clean sheet of the season. Both teams were nil all in game week 9, which was the game week that a lot of people got rid of Timu Pukki after his early run came to a shuddering halt.
Captain Wilson as well.
Captain Wilson, Captain Pukki. That was a big reckoning for both of those strikers. So looking at my team right now, I think the armband has to sit on Aguero for now at home to Crystal Palace. But look, it's liable to move. I will make a transfer for sure. I just don't know what that will be yet. Although the original plan had been to bank, but I think I'm more pro hits than I ever was before. So maybe a bit of excessive optimism there.
Excellent. So a few options there with the captains and the transfers there. Lots of different things happening. So yeah, just to say who we are Who Got The Assist. You can find us on Twitter at @WGT_FPL, at @WGT_Nick, and at @FPLStag. And make sure to listen and subscribe across the podding spectrum.
Yeah, absolutely. You'll find our league code if you want to join at EIKX03. There is a theme every week on the podcast. Last week it was FIFA. Cheers, Jeff. So well done to those who picked up on those references. It was a bit tougher than usual. We'll be back for a Q&A next week with there being such short time between the games finishing and the double game week 24 fixtures.
Well, thanks very much. It's been very interesting to take part in this from the airport. As you've probably heard throughout the podcast, there's been a lot of announcers making their appearance on the podcast for the first time. But these guys will be back next week. In the meantime, though, hope to assist you, and I'll be back in game week 28. Thank you. Bye.
Oh, it's a goal. Who got the assist? Who got the assist?
So thinking about my team and where I can make an advantage, and maybe my patience is could be better. I don't know.
That's wonderful irony. Sports Social Podcast Network.